Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution and production made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Of course, every investor's goal is profits. Leveraging your invested dollars to grow your retirement portfolio. But during volatile times, achieving this goal takes a well-reasoned strategy to turn sudden market moves into profits. Profits and protection. Taking advantage of volatile times. That's our latest addition to the webinar library, open to all InvestTalk insiders. To join up for free, just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab. End of commercial, and now today's InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to InvestTalk. This is our Wednesday, August 3rd, 2016 edition of InvestTalk, and we are here each and every weekday to help support you in your effort to reach your goal, whatever that is, maybe multiple goals. Usually that is financial independence, which is synonymous with retirement. Now, generally, to see your money grow towards your goal, you need to be disciplined. You need to save. You need to invest properly. And, you know, the stock market is one way to do that. It could be in the bond market. Could be through mutual funds. It could be through ETFs. It could be through commodities in some ways. It could be through real estate. And as a matter of fact, all of those should be on the table as an option. Because every asset class has its time. Every asset class has value. And at certain times, every asset class has some opportunity available to you. Now, not too long ago, InfoSheet went out to our InvestTalk insiders, and it focused on income property. Now, owning a rental property can be very a lucrative business with the ability to write off expenses, participate in real estate appreciation. You can depreciate investments as well, and you collect steady income. Now, the key to maximizing your profit when you are a landlord is to have your rental unit occupied continuously at the highest price possible. And when we look for investments for ourselves or our clients, we go by the 1% rule generally. So if we can get 1% of the purchase price in monthly rent, that usually turns out to be a pretty good deal. Okay, so that's kind of what we look for in potential opportunities. Now, receiving the highest price possible depends on a few factors. First thing you need to understand is the current market conditions. What are the comps in the area? What do other like properties rent for? Now, you can do multiple searches on Zillow or Craigslist or Redfin. We could go on MLS because we're professionals and find out the closest rental properties to a property we're looking at and see what they've been renting for. Compare amenities, how nice it is, etc. This will allow you to price your property in the ballpark of what others are listing it for. You have to understand the real market price. A lot of times the sellers of properties will overinflate what you can get for it and are misleading. So you have to kind of do your own research. Then you have to make your property look good. Stick to neutral paint colors, make it very clean, simple, not get too avant-garde with your design. You take many pictures of all the rooms, surrounding areas, and that's important as well. Tenants are not only living in your place, they're living in the surrounding areas as well. So be descriptive about location and play up the positives of that area. You can offer incentives for tenants to stay longer. Great tenants are, I don't say they're hard to find, but in some areas they are. It's always better to have a steady tenant that you can depend on and maybe a slightly lower price than it is to kind of push that price sometimes. But it depends on the rental market as well. You can price your unit high if you you can compromise too if you have it on the market. Now, unlike the housing market, where some sellers will price their homes low to stir demand and cause a bidding war, the dynamics are different for rentals. It's very rare to have a bidding war for rental units. Now, you price your unit a little above market price and allow room for negotiations. That's usually always best. And there's other tips as well. And investing in real estate is a complex endeavor. And especially here in California, where there aren't a lot of opportunities, the 1% rule is almost impossible to find here in California. But it is available in many other states. So think of that when you are looking at real estate. And if any of you have any questions about that, just get in contact with me and I can help you kind of hash out what your goals are and maybe see if there is an opportunity out there for you. Now, do you have questions about income properties? I am a licensed realtor in addition to being a financial advisor, and I can try to answer your questions or turn to our team to help find a solution. I have a team that I work with all over the country and different expertises and et cetera. And it's been advantageous for a lot of my clients. Now, you can check in now to our 24-hour listener line, 888-99-CHART. That is our anytime number. So let's take a call right now.
Hello. I have a question regarding 529 plans. I was looking into the California program. The investment is principal plus interest investment portfolio. Would this be something suitable for high school age kids? I'm getting a late start, so just wanted to get some kind of investment vehicle where I don't lose the principal, and wanted to see also to save tax-wise. So I'll be listening for the answer on your show. Thank you for your opinion.
Well, 529 plans are good. California usually doesn't have the best one. It depends on your needs, what your goals are, what your investment options are. We don't handle 529 plans, so I'm not completely up to speed on exactly what each state offers, but each state does offer their own different types of 529 plans. The principal plus one, it's a bond portfolio, so it's going to be super kind of conservative and safe. If you're playing catch up, obviously that's not going to really help you catch up because you're not going to get so much price appreciation. But at the same time, you know, getting aggressive in this environment is probably not the best way to go anyway. So, you're getting a late start. It's not a bad way to go, but obviously you're not going to really get to where you want to be because you have a late start. And it can be a part of your plan towards college. So definitely I would be open to the idea. Start one up, but have other options as well. Now, let's also try to answer a question sent in via a text message. And you can do that too. You can text your question to 888-99-CHART, just like Ben did from Jacksonville. And he says, Gilead dropped like a rock after earnings. I have 125 shares currently. I just put a limit order for another 40 shares at less than $80. Any thoughts? Well, so he's trying to pick some more up at under $80. So let me take a – it looks like he probably got it because right now it's at – close at $80.09 today. It was low today of – let's see. It did dip below earlier this week. So it sounds like he got it. I get a lot of calls on Gilead because the numbers look pretty good. Operating earnings are good, and they pay a little bit of dividend, 2.3%, and their dividend payout ratio is not very high, so they can certainly hike that. The problem is the sector and that they are tied to their hepatitis C drug for the vast majority of their earnings, and it basically cures people of hepatitis C. So they don't have a continuous flow of clients at a certain point. and they're trying to diversify into other areas with other drugs. Whether or not they're going to really succeed in that, that's hard to know. That's a gamble. There's pressure in the industry overall because of the price hikes on drugs, and Gilead's a good example of the cost of the hepatitis C drug. I think it's $1,000 a day for, I want to say, 90 days or something like that, that people have to take it. So, you know, it's in a downtrend. It's cheap on a relative basis, but it looks like earnings and revenue are falling, starting to fall, and that's going to continue to put pressure on the stock. So if you have faith in that they'll diversify away from the hepatitis C drug successfully, then I think it's probably a good buy down here. But that's a gamble, and it's a very risky stock, and I would be very wary of adding to your position. In fact, I would probably sell it. Now, how is gambling different from investing? This is a question people often think about and often ask, and we're going to get to that. It's one of our talking points today, and I'll get to a few more after the break. Now, the first step in building the retirement portfolio that's right fit for you is to understand your risk tolerance. What's your comfort level with risk? So how do you measure risk? How do you measure up? How does your portfolio match that risk level? How much risk are you really comfortable with? You can use our free risk analysis tool on investtalk.com and find out. It's a quick quiz and it's free on investtalk.com. Click on the Invest Talk tab. Now let's take a quick look at the market today. We had the S&P up a little over 6 points, about 0.3%. NASDAQ was up 22, about 4.4%. The Dow was up 0.2%, about 41 points. You have gold down slightly. Oil rebounded a little bit after dipping a little bit below $40 a barrel yesterday. Overall, you have the ADP numbers, that job numbers, that were kind of the preliminary report before the actual job numbers on Friday. That was fairly positive. But you also had the non-farm payroll, the ISM non-manufacturing reports that came in at about 55.5. That's down from about 56.5 last month. And that means that the service sector decelerated a little bit, but it's still in above 50, which means it is growing. So that was kind of a mixed picture there. And really, we're still waiting on what's the Fed going to do? What's the jobs number going to say on Friday? Is that going to push the Fed to maybe raise in September if the jobs number is good? And overall, the market is just weak. The low oil prices, oil booked below 40, is pushing the whole bond market south. And risk spreads are widening out again, and that is not good for equities. And that's why you saw big weakness in the market yesterday, and I think that will probably only continue in the near term. Now let's give you a review of what we're going to talk about today. I discussed the difference between gambling and investing. We're going to get to that and why people confuse investing with gambling and the people think that investing in the market is gambling. Then I want to talk about Tesla and why it is a disaster. It's a disaster as a business. Their products may be great, but it's a disaster as a business. I'm going to go over why. I also want to talk about hackers stealing bitcoins. I think that's something very, very important to discuss, especially in the light of what's going on with gold. And Bitcoin was doing very, very well. And alternative currencies kind of are on the rise. And I think it's important to touch on that. And then the 10 Commandments of Personal Finance. I think it'll be important to kind of get back to the basics of how to keep yourself in good financial position. Now, no matter what money topics you want to put on the table or make a comment about, we're here for you. Do you know how much you're paying in banking fees? How much you have in your emergency fund? Whatever it is, let's talk about it. My direct line is 888-99-CHART.
Hello, based on the obvious theme that no company lasts forever, should Coca-Cola, K-O, venture out into new lines of products, in your opinion, so that they can better compete with the revenues of their competitor, PepsiCo? Thank you so much, and your opinion is always cherished. Thank you.
That is a great question. It's an enlightened question, because I think it is important to look at companies not just about what they've done in the past, but look about what they're doing in the future. And we all know Coke and the decline in drinking of cola carbonated beverages into waters and juices and other different types of beverages besides sugar water, basically. And the society's becoming more health conscious, and just really there's been a decline in drinking Coke. So, and Coke has realized this. You know, they bought a bottled water company. They have Dasani. One thing I didn't realize was Dasani actually puts salt in their water so that you actually get thirstier and you drink more water. I didn't know that, but that was interesting about Dasani. It makes a lot of sense. But yes, I do think Coke needs to diversify a little bit more. Pepsi has, he talked about Pepsi Cola, and they've diversified into snacks and other types of packaged goods as opposed to just cola, and diversified across regions just like Coke has. So I do not that Coke's badly run. I'm not sitting here saying Coke is badly run, but sure, I think they do need to make some acquisitions. There's been a lot of talk about them, you know, buying Monster Energy, etc. And it's a good example of how when you're analyzing a company, you have to understand their strategy going forward, their current market that they're operating in, and whether management is doing the right things to keep them competing and keep profits growing in the future, and not stagnating or maybe falling because other competitors have recognized the opportunities in the marketplace and taking market share. So I love the call. I love the thinking. And yes, Coke, I think, does need to do a little bit more. Let's go to Art in Menlo Park. How you doing, Art?
Good, Justin. How are you today?
I'm doing fantastic. How you doing?
Oh, good. I just wanted to ask you, find out how the Nikkei market has been doing over the last, 25 years or so, because it seems like our money supply is, they're trying to do the same thing with our money supply as what they did with the Japanese market. Can you just give me an idea of how long or how poor the Nikkei has been, or how good it has been over the last 20 to 25 years?
I think that's a fantastic question. Let's go to, I'm going to go to a chart that goes, my data only goes back about 10 years. So let me see if I can find anything else. But yeah, the market in the Nikkei did hit massively high levels back in the late 80s. They had a very similar real estate bubble as we had. Back in the mid 2000s, they had a fervent bubble that was as big, arguably bigger than ours, and they had a huge crash. And we're going through something very similar. We did a lot of the same things that Japan did, which was combining banks and making one bank buy another, and that safeguarded assets, as opposed to having massive bankruptcies and writing off assets and really just making things letting entities go under, letting bondholders hold the bag. Japan didn't do that. We only really did that with Lehman and a handful of other semi-large companies in our crisis. But overall, we've been doing the same thing, lowering interest rates, doing QE, which Japan did, a very, very similar situation. And no, stocks have not done well. They haven't recovered all that they were back in the late 80s. So I think our economy is a little bit different. We're more diversified. I think we have a stronger economy in general. But from a financial system standpoint and understanding the problems they had and the problems they continue to struggle with, I think that we're going to also continue to struggle with those same problems for many years.
Yeah, so I guess the question is, how is the Nikkei at this point? Is it like up from back in the 80s, or is it still down in the dumps as far as that goes?
Let me see if I can find a longer chart. I haven't looked at this in a long, long time. So let me see how far. Yeah, okay. No, it has not. So back in the late 89, all right, the Nikkei was at 38,916. Do you have any idea where it's at today?
No idea.
16,000.
Oh, so it's about less than half then, about 45% of it, I guess.
Yeah, less than half. So it was, call it 39,000 around the peak. I hit a low, an actual low. It hit a double bottom in 2009. It hit a low of about 7,800, and now it's at 16,000. So, you know, I don't rule that type of market out going forward for the next little while. Thanks for calling, Art. Now we're open to your money questions and comments. We have about a half hour left in the show, so get your call in sooner rather than later. 888-99-CHART is our number.
We thank you for listening to the podcast today. InvestTalk is one of the few podcasts that allows you to speak directly with the hosts, to bring your money questions to a registered investment advisor, and if you call between 4 and 5 p.m. Pacific, you can get through and talk. That's when InvestTalk is produced live. 888-99-CHART is our direct line, 888-992-4278, or if you prefer, send them a note directly. Just click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin on investtalk.com. We continue now with this Wednesday, August 3rd, InvestTalk. In order to sustain higher returns, pension funds are increasing their exposure to riskier assets. Will pension funds face more volatility ahead? That's next time. What's your talking point today? 888-99-CHART is how to reach us from anywhere in the U.S.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Let's get to our main discussion for the day, and that is about the misconception that investing in the stock market is akin to gambling. And I understand how a lot of people come to that conclusion. They think it's you can make money, you can buy a stock, you can make money, or you can lose money. Same thing at the gambling table, right? You sit down, plop your money down, you can win money or you can lose money. So the results, possibilities are the same. Now the probabilities, however, are different. Now there are parts of or strategies in the market that I think are gambling to a degree. Think of day trading, right? It's a strategy. It's very similar to gambling, but investing in the long run, I don't view that as gambling. And you can gamble online, think online poker, and you can buy stocks online. So I see that parallel as well. But when you buy a stock, you're buying a fractional piece of a real physical business. You are now part owner of that business. And because of that, you are entitled to a proportional share in the profits that the business generates. Now, the S&P 500 has registered about a 5.7% annualized gain over the past decade. That does not even include dividends, which adds another couple percentage points. Now, keep in mind, this includes the Great Recession, one of the deepest bear markets in history. It also includes massive money printing by the Fed as well. So there's two sides to the table, pun intended. Now, if you go and sit down at the roulette table, however, and you put your money down in different numbers or colors or whatever, every $100 per hour that you bet, you're going to lose more than $5. on average. And that's just how the odds play out. So when you hear somebody or you get the notion that investing is gambling, sure, I understand where that comes from. But when you understand business, you understand businesses, you understand ownership in the business, you understand your rights and really what you're buying, you realize if you do it right and you are educated about your decision making, you are going to come out ahead. And the odds are for every $100 you put in on a yearly basis, you'll probably make $5 every year. And sometimes maybe more. So understand that and don't get discouraged. Don't get cynical about the market. All right, now what do we want to get to? Let's get to a voicemail. Don't save your questions. We want to hear from you. We want to know what's on your mind. We're here to try to answer your questions. Now you can ask me directly or privately on investtalk.com. Click on the Contact Justin button. Or you can use your phone at 888-99-CHART. Leave a message, and we will answer it on the next InvestTalk.
Hi, guys. I bought some of Masco Corporation, MAS, at around $31.50. And I was just curious if you see that as something I should hold long-term or sell now that it's up 15% or so. Thanks a lot.
All right, he's looking at Masco Corporation. They manufacture, distribute, and install home improvement and building products, including faucets, cabinets, architectural coatings, and windows. So they're very related to the housing market. And when the housing market does well, usually Masco does fairly well. Now, it is a good company. They have good long-term profitability metrics. Their return on equity is usually very strong, although it dipped dramatically back in 2008, 9, 10, 11, and they've been slowly returning to profitability. So that's a positive. They've had a huge, they hit a low of, let's see, about $4 and change back in 2009. Now they're at $36.56. However, if you go back even farther to maybe 2004, let me look at this chart, see if I can bring this up. They had a high in 2007 of about $27, $28, and you know they fell all the way down to four. So if the housing market falls on hard times again, which it certainly could if the whole economy falters, Masco will go down. So you need to, and I think we're approaching the next recession. And you see that in first half GDP numbers, which were very, very tepid. So I would say this is a very risky time. It's not cheap at these levels. So I would say I would take some money off the table. Now, they do have good cash flow generally, but at these levels, it's just not a good value. So I would take some of it off the table and have a tight stop on it. And technically, it's in the short term, it's fairly strong, so no reason not to ride a little bit of that. But I would take a little bit of your profit off the table because of how expensive it is, and look for a price in the teens. That's where I would love to pick it up long term. Now let's try to answer this text question that came in. It says, "Hi Justin, do you like Taser? Thanks, Mark." That's a pretty simple question. T-A-S-R is the symbol. Most people kind of know what Taser does. They make tasers, and they sell a lot to law enforcement, private security, sell it to individuals as well. From a valuation standpoint, it's very expensive, very, very expensive. Operating earnings yield is about 2%, and so I'm going to say no. I'm not a fan of Taser at these levels. Technically, it's still in an uptrend, but it's very expensive here. Kind of trying to approach its highs from middle of last year. It had a big drop from in the low 30s all the way down into, wow, that's a big drop, all the way down into the mid-teens, and it's rallied back to 2884. If it gets back into the low to mid-teens, yeah, I'd pick it up, but not at 2872 today. But keep it on your watch list because I do think it is a company that has long-term sustainability. Now let's talk about Tesla. I want to talk about Tesla. Why? Well, Tesla came out with earnings. It is Wall Street's darling. Everybody loves it. And it's a story stock. It's the perfect example of a story stock. It has a great story. They make cool products. It's innovative. They're led by a very charismatic leader, Elon Musk, who has done some extraordinary things like launch SpaceX and Tesla. He's part of the PayPal mafia, and there's a long resume, very impressive resume. The problem is Tesla is an absolute disaster when it comes to actually making money. And a business can be one of two things. It can make and sell a product, or it can provide a service. And when it does that, the difference between its revenues and its expenses determine its earnings and profits. And profits allow for long-term sustainability. The problem is that over the past 13 years since Tesla has been in existence, it has not once made a profit. Not once. And over the last 2 years, it has burned a massive amount of capital. $3.2 billion. It's massively unprofitable. It uses very aggressive and unrealistic accounting practices, and it relies heavily on this story that Wall Street loves and that the banks will continue to perpetuate because they want to be the next company or the company that sells shares in the open market or to shareholders, to new shareholders, and gets a piece of that. Now, Tesla relies on huge and generous subsidies from the state and federal government. And if you take that away, it's very hard to see how Tesla would manage to stay afloat at all, even come close. Now, the products are amazing. But then again, so was the Concorde jet, which that crashed and burned, shall we say. Now, perhaps this is why the subsidies, this is why Tesla is seeking Chinese taxpayer subsidies now, because they need to expand their business into China. And the best way to do that is to get subsidies from the Chinese government, not just America. So they need a plan B, and you know, especially if Donald Trump gets in office, certainly those tax subsidies could go away. So after the break, I want to get to the next step of why Tesla is so bad of a company. From an operation standpoint, they're not bad from a product standpoint. They're bad from an operation standpoint. A cash flow standpoint, a profit standpoint. And it's extremely hard to see a way that they can actually turn it around. So we're going to get to that after the break. Now, KP Financial has a program that is designed to generate a steady income for you. Steady income stream. It's our most popular program for retirees and near retirees. It's called our Balanced Income Program. Steady yield for the risk averse. Now, if you'd like to see more about it on investtalk.com, just click on the investing tab.
Why not join our InvestTalk insiders? Justin talked about investing in rental property earlier. There's an info sheet on that topic that's accessible to all InvestTalk insiders. These are quick reads, 1 and 2 pagers on popular money topics, and it's free to join. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab.
Yes, enjoy the show. Paul from Santa Cruz. Love to get your take on Kroger. That's KR, buy, sell, or hold. Got a small position. Just want to know if it's time to get out or hold on. Thank you.
All right, I was looking at Kroger, certainly an anti-cyclical company, one of the largest grocers in the world. He has a $32 billion market cap, certainly very large. I would say right now it's about valued. It's not overvalued. It's not really undervalued. It's about valued. It yields about 1.5%. That certainly could be raised. They have room to do that based on profits and cash flow. Let me look at the chart. It's down. It's been down recently. Kind of in a downtrend. Let me see where it's going to find support. It should find support here in the high 20s. Let me go back to 2008. Let's see how far back this goes. Yeah, you know, 2008, it was around $14 a share. Hit a low of, let's see, around $10. So, you know, compared to the overall market, held up much better. I don't hate it. You know, it's not overvalued. It's not undervalued. It could raise its dividend. I like it that it's anti-cyclical. You know, I give it a 7 out of 10. Now let's get back talking about Tesla. I talked a little bit about how it is a disaster from an earnings standpoint, and long term, it's very hard to see them be profitable. Now they also made it worse recently by acquiring SolarCity, which Elon owns 22% of. There was a lot of nepotism in this deal, and there are red flags everywhere. His cousin ran the company. Now, this is basically taking two hemorrhaging companies with opaque accounting and blending them together. Certainly a recipe for disaster. Now, what we do know is that SolarCity has been struggling to raise equity, and obviously Tesla doesn't have a problem with that because it's Wall Street's darling. Now, if we just focus on the deal, it makes no sense for Tesla at all. Really, it's just a bailout of the SolarCity shareholders, which he was one of, and his family members as well. Now, to give you a sense of how bad SolarCity's accounting is that their forecast for Q1 was that they will generate positive cash by year end. Now, they didn't mean positive cash flow. They mean positive cash. Now, what does positive cash mean? It neither means positive, nor does it mean cash. What it in fact means is that's cash obtained via financing sources. And this is what I talk about when you talk about cash flow. There's cash flow from financing, there's cash flow from investing, and there's cash flow from operating activities. And operating activities is really all you should care about. And SolarCity is operating based on financing cash flows, tax equity, cash equity, and non-recourse debt, meaning all the debt that they've issued. Now, Tesla shareholders to acquire SolarCity are going to have to issue 0.11 shares for each SolarCity share, basically 11% dilution of the equity. And mainstream media is reporting that it's a $2.6 billion acquisition. And after the break, I'm going to get to telling you why that is grossly underestimated. All right. Now we have about 10 more minutes left in the show. So if you have a question, you need to call in ASAP because the show is going to be coming to a close after this break. Now you can still get through with your questions. We still have time. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. Steve has appointments coming up via Skype on August 10th. So if you'd like to schedule an appointment, go to investtalk.com. Let me finish up my Tesla discussion. Before the break, I was talking about how the media, the mainstream media, is reporting that the deal for SolarCity is valued at $2.6 billion. Well, in fact, it's valued at much more than that. It's costing shareholders much more than that. Namely, it's because of all the debt that SolarCity has on its balance sheet. $1.3 billion in long-term debt, over $200 million in so-called solar bonds, then another $900 million in convertible debt, and another $625 million in solar asset-backed notes. They're burning $65 million per month in cash based on operating cash flow of negative $790 million last year. And as of March, they only had $362 million in cash. So they're burning through that in about less than half a year. So they're going to be gone. They're going to be out of cash by September, October. So that's why Tesla bought them out, because they couldn't raise any capital. So really the deal is closer to double the $2.6 billion, really about $5.2 billion. So Tesla really cannot survive without two things. Continuation of generous subsidies, which at massive volumes, which Tesla needs to get to economies of scale, the government can't afford. And number two, they need generous equity injections from gullible investors. So really, Tesla long term, they have they're going to have trouble, I think, staying in business through the next 3 or 4 years. Now let's get to another text question. This one is from Rochelle in Atlanta. Hi, Steve and Justin. I listen to your podcast and love your show. I'm looking at the REIT HST for a long-term hold in my Roth IRA account. Wondered if you like this REIT, if you think it would be a good one for a Roth account, and what would be a good place to buy. Thanks, and I will listen for the answer on the podcast. All right, looking at Host Hotels and Resorts. First off, it's a always a pretty good idea to think about holding REITs within a Roth IRA or a regular IRA or a 401k, anything tax deferred, because income from a REIT is taxed at your ordinary income tax rate. But in a tax deferred account, that doesn't matter. So that's first off, she's doing a good job there. Now the question is HST the way you want to go? Well, Host Hotel Resorts owns properties and conducts operations through Host LP. It's basically a hotel REIT. And when the economy is good, that's fine. The issue is when the economy is not so good. Yields about 4.5%. Let me look at the cash flows. I always like to look at cash flows. Cash flows are pretty strong. How much did they dip back in 08? Ooh, they dipped a lot. It went from about $1 billion free cash flow in 2007 to $348 million in 2008 and only $212 million in 2009. And hit a low of about $119 million in 2011. So free cash flow dropped by 90%, which is pretty dramatic. So this is very cyclical, so you have to be aware that if you go into recession, you're probably going to have a big downdraft in Host Hotels. But their return on equity is pretty good. They have a modest amount of debt, good cash flows. You know, I don't think it's cheap at these levels, but I also don't think it's, you know, overly expensive either. So if you have a long-term time horizon, I would say go for it. HST is a symbol. Now, finally, I want to get to a report that came out yesterday that hackers have stolen bitcoins worth $65 million from Bitfinex's website, and they've sold about 119,000 bitcoins worth about $65 million at current prices. And based on that news, the Bitcoin fell about 20%, recovered a little bit from there. And this is reminding a lot of people of Mt. Gox, which had a similar breach back in 2014, and they blame the disruption then on technical issues, cyber attacks, etc. And it later filed for bankruptcy. And Bitfinex is one of the largest Bitcoin exchanges in the world. It had the highest volume of dollar-denominated transactions over the last 30 days. And it just goes to show you that I do like alternative currencies. I like the idea of Bitcoin because it controls the quantity out there, unlike the Fed printing money. But this goes back to what I always say is nature's Bitcoin, gold. That's what gold is. It's nature's Bitcoin, and that's a much safer place to be than actual Bitcoins. Now, our time is up. A reminder, if you have a question about any money topics from 401k rollovers to real estate, you can contact me directly. Just click on the Contact Justin button on InvestTalk.com. I'm Justin Klein, Executive Vice President of KP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP, Thank you for listening today. Let's get together again on the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.